Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We are The Whole Scoop and Nothing But the Scoop, health and wellness radio show, where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. And, of course, if you're listening to the show, you know that. Our goal, of course, is to provide you with different, sometimes opposite perspectives to allow you to make informed decisions about your right health choices. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian and practicing for over 30 years, and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. And you can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Again, as I said, as a healthcare practitioner, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics. Tonight's show is absolutely no exception to that, because we never accept that. So tonight our show is Special Neighbors, Real Life United. Let me remind you, of course I've got to read this, let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. I'm reading that faster and faster every time. It's amazing. The call-in number is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. You can also direct your questions and comments to our Facebook page, The Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. So make sure you check us out on that. Make sure you give us feedback. Give us ideas for shows that you want to hear. We're always open. So all that being said, 347-855-8894. I will be taking questions later on in the show where I'll call out the last four digits of your telephone number. Remember to press the number one if you want to ask a question to become part of the queue. So, all that being said, let me tell you who we have tonight. I'm really excited. Her name is Leah Randall. She's currently the program manager for ResCare Incorporated, where she's responsible for overseeing all aspects of programs and services provided to individuals with intellectual disabilities in four intermediate care facilities across three counties. She has extensive experience in human services field, beginning with her first 12 years working with children and young adults, some with complex medical concerns and others with more complex behavioral challenges. While doing that, she trained to work as part of a crisis response organization hired to provide additional support. Leah has extensive experience with the state of Florida Department of Children and Families as a child protective investigator and experience as a director of operations focusing on waivered services for individuals and disabilities and assisted living facilities, where she was able to combine her experiences in human resources. She's a certified brain injury specialist and a graduate of Capella University with a degree in business administration. Personally, Leah loves people and is grateful for all the lessons that they teach her every day. All that being said, let's bring Leah on. Say hello to Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. You know, this is a great show. I'm excited to be doing this show because it's a topic I think that doesn't get discussed enough. So, you know, just in preparing for this show alone, I kind of even was astounded by some of the statistics that I've seen. One out of every five adults may experience some form of disability. 53 million adults in the U.S. live with disabilities. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. I find that it's the highest percentage is in the southern states. Alabama, 31.5%. Mississippi, 31.4%. Tennessee, 31.4%.
Wow.
You know, they don't even really give, these are CDC statistics, they don't even give a real explanation except that those areas have higher chronic disease rates. But one of the things that I read when I was preparing for this and I see when I'm doing the statistics, one of the things that stuck out with me, it says that we are all at risk at some point in our lifetime for a disability. And that just kind of hit home and it said, this is why we're doing this show.
Absolutely.
Everybody needs to understand more about it, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think that the more people understand, the more interested they are and more appreciative of people that have a disability or the fact that they themselves could have a disability at some point and be facing some of the challenges that, you know, I've had to deal with or help people support them in dealing with over the years.
I think as people, we tend to compartmentalize too, and we say things like, oh, well, you know, this person might have been born with that, or, oh, what a tragedy, you know, this happened, and now this person's like this or whatever. And we tend to compartmentalize things and stick them in some area of our brains that, oh, that's just a separate piece of life. When, in fact, if you look at these statistics and you go, we all are at risk at some point in our lifetime. Well, I mean, that's absolutely true, and it doesn't necessarily have to be what you think it is at this point. It could be the highest rate of a disability is a walking disability. So that could happen to anybody at any point in time. So you see how that paradigm shifts a little bit when you start to talk about the realities?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm not sure why people think of it that way. I think if we all, you know, sit back and think about the people around us, our families, our extended families, we can all think of probably several people that we know or, you know, friends of friends or, like I said, extended family that have some sort of disability that they're working to overcome or working with on a day-to-day basis.
And you know this better than I, and that's why you're here. I mean, the progression of disabilities can cause people to have to be uprooted or no longer be able to live where they were living or have to live in a particular situation, which is your specialty. And then let's just advance that a little bit and say, okay, they have come to you. What about the family that's coming to you for the first time and not really understanding what it is that it's about, and what are the kinds of things you tell them?
Well, I think probably the biggest struggle with families like you're referring to are just the challenges of negotiating the system, learning what's out there, what's available to them for support. Learning how to obtain services, who they need to talk to, what are the right things to say, what information do they need. So, you know, the first time I speak to a family that's looking for some support, you know, we talk about who are the right people to call to get the ball moving, to help with finding the correct funding or what might be the most appropriate setting, what level of support does somebody need, how much help do they need. What's important to them? What's important to the family? Where do they want to live? Who do they want to live with? All of those questions can be extremely overwhelming.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's break that down for just a bit. Let's just say I'm brand new to this whole thing, and you just said a mouthful there. You went, you know, where do you want to live? Who do you want to be? Where should I point you in what direction, depending on what's going on with you? Okay, so I'm based on those comments, I'm assuming that there are specific federal funds and or grants or something or another. Is that what you're referring to, that people are eligible for to assist them with these situations?
Yes, and every state is a little bit different with what they offer, how many placements are available, things like that. And you have to meet certain qualifications to qualify for a certain level of. So your disability has to fit in a category, which, you know, is unfortunate, but that's, you know, they have to have a system, of course. And you have to meet certain requirements to qualify for those services.
Okay. So, Let's just take a little bit of a walk me through. If I have a walking disability, I didn't mean, excuse the pun there, that wasn't intended. just take me through that. If I'm no longer able to live on my own, and I'm disabled to the point where, you know, I need assistance with walking. I need, and I'm not talking about adult assisted living. I'm talking about a disability that impedes my life. What does that mean for me? I mean, we don't have to use the walking. Like, we can use some real examples of what you see on a daily basis. You know, if you want to throw out some examples and give people some ideas. I mean, are we talking about brain injuries? Are we talking about Down syndrome? Are we talking about a combination? Do they have other things that happen? And then they come to you, and then, you know, does that, people have a tendency, when I say people, I'm speaking for the general public, that they have a tendency to believe that if they come to you, that they have there's no place for them to move forward, and they're not productive, and that is just so far from the truth, right?
Right, I agree 100%. So people can have a variety of challenges. My experience is working with intellectual disabilities of some level. People who, you know, the medical term is that they've been diagnosed as mentally retarded. That's still the clinical term, even though, you know, the politically correct way we talk about it changes sometimes. But so people with an intellectual disability that they've maybe had since birth, or like you mentioned, people with a brain injury, some catastrophic event that causes some kind of trauma to the brain and results in them having much lowered functioning and needing support in areas of their life that they didn't need before. People that have those disabilities, sometimes they can live at home and live with their family, and they need some support. And you know, as they grow to be adults, you know, kind of the natural course of life is to move on and move out on your own. Some of those folks who need lots of support, that can put a lot of stress on a family, especially if, you know, the parents or the family members are aging. It makes it harder to care for individuals. If they have siblings, it's hard to balance time spent and providing support, but still giving those other siblings the opportunity to have a regular childhood, as we all think of it probably a little bit differently. But so people come to look for services for lots of different reasons. Sometimes they maybe have a family member that's just not available anymore. They're ill and they can't care for their family member, or they've passed away, and the person needs somebody, someplace to be, to help them.
So if that's the case, and they need somebody to help them, and their family member has passed away or has become, you know, not able to take care of them, how then do they get to you? Like, who makes that initial call? Who knows what happens?
Well, the family, and I'm getting to know the system here in Florida. I'm fairly new to Florida, and that's, and like I said, every state is a little bit different. But in Florida, we have the Agency for Persons with Disabilities, and that is the agency that hooks people up with a support coordinator, a waiver support coordinator, they call them, and they talk to the families or talk to the people supporting the person to see what their needs are, what level of support they need. Do they have medical concerns? Do they have other challenges, behavioral challenges? Do they have geographical challenges, you know, to being close to other family members? They take all of those things into consideration, and then they work with providers to try to figure out what might be the best living situation for that person.
So you want to give that again? What is it called? The agency for what?
The Agency for Persons with Disabilities.
And that's in the state of Florida. But does every state generally have something similar? Because, you know, this
sure.
is going out over the Internet. This is
yeah.
encompassing everybody. Okay.
I think it's different everywhere. I Minnesota for ever, and their system is county, so county to county, people hook up with a county case manager, and that person coordinates finding, you know, assisting them with finding services. So it's just figuring out where you're at and where that support coordination happens. If it happens at the county level, if it happens at a different agency altogether, like here in Florida, or if it happens at the state level, I think it's different everywhere.
Okay. So is it limited to particular disabilities, or is it ages, or not just disability?
It really is just the different people's ages or different types of disabilities may just make you qualify for different types of services.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be clear, because we've got people listening, and it might have sparked something with them, where, you know, they know somebody that maybe they don't consider to be disabled but could be disabled or can no longer take care of themselves in a way that they used to. Would that, you know, would this be worthy of them just checking out something like this just to see if there's anything available? That's where I was going in my head. I just didn't explain that very well.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I have to say again, you know, my experience has all been specific to people with intellectual disabilities. So that's really all I can speak to specifically, but.
Okay.
It can be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So then, okay, you get a call and they come and see you. I just want to kind of walk through what it's like for someone who doesn't, I don't know who's listening, whether they are well-versed in this subject and they want just to see if they pick up more information, or they're brand new to this, or, like I said, the person that doesn't even realize that they may know somebody until they're listening to this show and then they want to know more because they don't know what to do. So I kind of want to walk through the newbie and then see where do they go then. You get a call as the provider, and then you meet with the family. You determine what services they're eligible for, which they're eligible, and then what? Then what happens? Like, let's just say that you're a fit for them for that particular person, and then there's a myriad of dynamics that have to that occur and procedures and whatever, and so what happens?
Right. I mean, I want to back you up a little bit, because I think the most important part of when somebody is considering, you know, looking for supports of some kind, whether it's 24-hour services or hourly services, or, you know, just somebody to come in and help out a couple times a week or something, I've been in all of those situations. The most important part of that relationship, or, you know, trying to find that support, is it starts with that first phone call. You know, I get a phone call, or I've gotten phone calls, and they just want to know, you know, what is our program about? What can we offer? What's the, you know, families have a lot of questions. What's the house like? What are the other people that live there like? You know, if my loved one moves into this setting, what are they going to be doing on a day-to-day basis? Those kinds of things. But most importantly, it's that first phone call. It's what they hear. It's that interaction. You know, when I'm talking to somebody, I want them to feel comfortable. I want them to understand, you know, that, you know, we believe, or wherever I'm at, wherever I'm working at the time, it's their home. We want to make it their home. We want it to be a fit for them. We don't want them to fit into us. We want to learn about them. We want to know what's important to them. We want to know, you know, we want them to know that we strive to help people be as independent as possible. So it's a learning. It's people getting to know people. So that initial conversation sometimes just gives the person the right feeling about something, or not the right feeling about something, you know, and maybe that's, you know, wherever I'm at, my program is maybe not the right one for everybody, but it's the right one for some people. So it's really just kind of talking about what's important, you know, do they feel comfortable with the information I'm giving and how I'm giving it and how they feel about me, really, as a person. Am I, you know, do they think they're going to be able to trust me and talk to me and share information with me? And, you know, we're talking about somebody's loved ones. So from the gate, it's about the relationship. People have to choose a placement or support for their person, for their loved one. They have to feel good about it. They have to be able to trust that provider. You know, they leave them in that care maybe, and they have to feel good about that. So it's all about the relationship from the very first phone call.
I'm sitting here as a person going, you better believe it's about that relationship, because if I'm going to entrust the care of my family member to you, I better have some kind of bond with you. So they start with a bond with you, and then it trickles down, though, with the staff that's there and what happens, and then the other people who are living there with them, right, which would be, you know, it's a shared situation. Correct.
Oh, absolutely. Right. It's about how the whole thing feels, and that's not a technical thing. That's not something you can just explain. It's just you're in a situation. You're talking to a manager or this, like you said, the staff that are working there. You're, you know, observing the environment. What's on the walls? Are there, you know, is it comfortable? Are there pictures? Are people having fun? Do they seem comfortable? I mean, it's just all about how it feels. It has to feel right.
So, okay. So let's just say they're liking what they're hearing. I mean, to me, I'm a person that likes to do my homework. I'm a person if I'm going to talk to you, I'm probably going to talk to three other people as well. So if that's the case, and I am looking for the right fit, and yes, it is about the feel and making sure that it feels right. All that being said, what's another key component that I should be looking for that people would want to feel comfortable about? Like, say, what's one of the things that there are probably so many fears that people have when they come to you.
For sure.
Yeah. So what is one of the biggest ones? And I'm assuming maybe it's safety, maybe it's not, maybe it's interaction. You know, I'm sure that every family is different, but I know that as a professional, you pretty much know what those points are. So if there were four key points that people like tend to hold on to when they're talking to you initially, what are they?
Well,
you know, I'm not holding
points.
You four. And give me a...
Okay. Well, I mean, you talked about safety. I think that's probably in the forefront of most families or support coordinators. They want to make sure that the person is going to be safe. We all want our loved ones to be safe. So putting them in an unfamiliar situation thing, you want to make sure that they're going to be safe. You want to make sure that they're going to be... they're going to have opportunities to, for me, that means opportunities to do what's important for them. You know, like I said before, like, you know, we talk about if people are a fit for the program, that is true. We want people to fit into a program, but we also want to make the program fit the person. So
okay,
we're not looking for, go ahead.
Give us an example.
Well, I myself have a stepdaughter with a disability. If she's looking for somewhere to live, I'm going to ask questions about what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis, but I'm also going to be looking for that provider to be asking me questions, to want to learn about my loved one, you know,
okay,
looking for them to want to learn what's important to them, what's important to me as a family member, what's going to make me feel safe and secure. Because that's different for everybody. Like you said, it can be extremely different for everybody. But as a manager, as somebody helping with that process, I want somebody to ask me the scary questions or the, you know, the questions they really want to ask but they don't know how to ask. Or so I try to put people at ease to say, I know you have some questions. There's no bad question. Ask me whatever you think, you know, because people are nervous. It's,
Well, they're nervous and they're not even sure what to ask. If they're brand new to the situation, they're not even sure what they need to know. So if I don't know what I need to know, if I don't know what I don't know and I don't know what I need to know, I know that I'm feeling really uncomfortable. And I know that I'm feeling like, oh, my God, this has to happen, but I don't know what I'm doing, right?
Mm-hmm,
So if I'm going to shop around a little bit, then what's the one thing that I would want to see? Is it like, is cleanliness to the home a component? Is the neighborhood a component? Is, you know, what if I like to do gardening? Would I have, you know, or my loved one likes to do some gardening? Would I have the opportunity? Should I look for things like that, or is that unrealistic? You know, what if they play the guitar? Is that allowed? You know, I mean, those kinds of things. Can people actually feel comfortable with things like that? Now, with intellectual disabilities, you know, I don't know. Do you have do they have the opportunity to do things? Do they work? Is there a work program? Do they go out and interact with other people? Can they go? You know, I'm just kind of putting myself in the place of what I would want to know.
Those are all things that people need to have high expectations, and they need to ask about the things that are important to them. For me, cleanliness, of course, is important, and that's connected to safety and all of those, the basic needs kind of things. But opportunity is important. You know, what opportunities is my loved one going to have? Are they going to be able? What does it look like during the day? And, you know, nobody wants to sit around and watch TV all day or anything like that. What kind of opportunities do they have? You know, lots of individuals that I've worked with, they have opportunities to go to some kind of a day program. If they have the ability to work on some vocational skills, they can do that. Maybe it's more recreational for some folks and more social, gives them social opportunities, some opportunities to learn some more basic skills like home living skills, how to do some laundry, how to, you know, cook some things on their own, things like that. So it's always important what kind of opportunities they're going to have. Like you said, if somebody plays guitar as a loved one, I would want to know how that provider is going to support that for that person. So I once worked in a situation where I had a house. Four individuals lived in that home, and a neighbor across the street happened to play guitar, and there was an individual that lived in the house that was very interested in playing guitar. And so just being a good neighbor, saying, hello, how are you? They got to know each other, and the neighbor offered to give guitar lessons to the individual that lived in the house. And it was this amazing relationship. And so it was just this great opportunity for that individual. It's just like we might have that same opportunity with my neighbor across the street or your neighbor across the street, but it's just making those situations happen or, you know, looking for them, seeking them out, whatever the case is, but always looking for what kind of opportunities the person is going to have. They shouldn't have any less opportunities than you or I have.
And I think I want to touch on that for a minute. I want to talk about that for just a second, about the opportunities and how they should not be limited. But I also want to make a point here, and the point is that if you are looking for a place, and based on what you just said, and you use the guitar example, you sure don't want a place that says, oh, no, you can't go have lessons across the street because you're not allowed to leave here. And if you get an answer like that, probably not the best place. We're at the half-hour mark. I'm just going to kind of remind people. Give me a second here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
So we're going to go back to talking with Leah Randall, but tonight's show is Special Neighbors, Real Life United. I'm Carol Ferraci. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. And we're talking with Leah Randall. She's the program manager for ResCare, and we are having a really great discussion tonight on all kinds of things. But, Leah, I want to do me a favor and give me the name of that agency again. It was the Agency for Persons with Disabilities.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's just here in Florida, but you want to look for something similar if you're looking for placement. So that all being said, you know, I think it's real important that we talk on this show a lot about making choices and asking questions and being able to ask questions and not be intimidated by people that you think know more than you do. Well, you wouldn't be in the situation that you're in healthcare if you're seeing a provider of any kind, if you were the provider and you had all the answers. So if you're across the table from somebody and they're giving you answers on your questions, you are entitled to have questions and you are entitled to scrutinize those answers. And Leah, you made a great point in that you would want to hear, as a family member, you would want to hear some questions back that are unique and specific to that particular person so they can figure out what works best for that person. So all of that being said, I kind of want to get back to where we were and talk about that just a little bit more. So do you want to kind of elaborate from where we were?
I think we were talking mostly about, you know, giving people opportunities and making sure that people have the same opportunities or as many opportunities or, you know, a variety of opportunities as you or I or anybody else that lives in our neighborhood. I've had the opportunity to do some work with folks who live in smaller settings, maybe four people live in a home or something like that. Maybe they've lived in those settings for a long time, and that gets to be comfortable. But it's always good to be challenged a little bit, just like the rest of us. And I've had, like I said, the opportunity to give people the chance to participate in moving forward, maybe moving into an apartment kind of setting with supports in that apartment, or moving into a smaller setting with a friend that they met maybe at work or whatever, just like you or I would. You know, as we're kind of moving out onto our own, we might live with a friend for a while till we figure out what we want to do with our lives or whatever we go through at those times. It's about giving people the opportunities to kind of have those normal rhythm of life kind of opportunities. And I've watched people just flourish amazingly, like folks we didn't think would be able to live in an apartment setting for example, and, you know, move them in, give them a chance, really work hard on skill building with somebody, and it's amazing to see people learn new things and be proud of how successful they are and really, you know, surprise everyone. Sorry?
You want to give us a story? You want to tell us a story? Give us an example?
Well, sure. When I was working in Minnesota, worked with a variety of individuals living in those smaller settings with maybe three other roommates, things like that. And the company that I was working for just had, you know, we had a vision. We move ahead and, you know, how can we help these individuals kind of transition forward? Always thinking about forward, building independence, not just letting care get kind of stagnant or, you know, just too comfortable. All of us get that way sometimes, too comfortable. So we worked on developing a program. So we bought an apartment building. We worked on setting that building up so it was accessible. We had one apartment in the building that was kind of a gathering place. We had a big TV where everybody could hang out, play games, talk. But they had their own apartment in the building. So they always had staff available, 24 hours to them, but they had their own space. They were responsible for their own space. They could invite family members over to their own space. They could learn to cook new things that they like to eat. They could do their own grocery shopping, things like that. And to see people kind of branch out and learn those new skills, and just some really cool things happened. You learned people you didn't know before, maybe, that they had this, they really liked to cook and they wanted to learn to cook new things, you know, because maybe they didn't have that as much opportunity in that different type of setting. So I have a million stories, probably, just to watch people kind of grow and learn. And
I guess I'll share a story with us, only because I want everybody that's listening, or who will listen, because these shows get archived and people do go back and access them. Anybody that has an interest in this particular show, let's give them a heartwarming story. Tell us,
sure.
You know, give us somebody that you just mentioned, somebody that you didn't think was going to be able to really flourish and blossom, and they did, and it was fabulous. Let's go ahead with that one, and we've got some other things to cover. And again, I'm just going to ask you, if you want to ask a question, you can do the blog on the Facebook Blog Talk Radio page, or you can press 1 for questions, and you'll get in the queue. Sometimes, I will tell you, sometimes when pressing 1, for whatever reason, it doesn't always work. So if you are pressing 1 and I'm not seeing it and I'm not calling on you in a couple minutes, then know that go over to the blog, because we're checking the blog too, and let me know that, and we'll go that route, okay? All right, so Leah, just give us a heart warmer, okay?
All right. Okay. I worked with a young man who had some challenges. He had an intellectual disability. He had gotten in some trouble. He had made some bad decisions. And unfortunately, sometimes folks that have an intellectual disability kind of find themselves in a situation where they're either being taken advantage of, or they don't understand maybe the ramifications of some decisions that they make. So he had been in a little bit of trouble, ended up in a group living situation, really needed quite a bit of support with just the day-to-day stuff, figuring out, do your laundry so you have clean clothes, and, you know, let's work on eating, and let's not, get too anxious and nervous about things. So needed quite a bit of support for a pretty long time, several years. And when we were discussing apartment programs and who might be good for that setting, and some of us were nervous about considering this individual just because of the possibility of, you know, a setback. Maybe they've come really far and he learned a lot of things, and we don't want to put him in a situation where he's going to be uncomfortable. And so moved into a supported apartment kind of setting, and just worked really closely with him. Had some rough times with just being nervous or getting used to the routine and doing his own grocery shopping and things like that, the social aspects, which is hard for people sometimes. He got in the groove, really, you know, like I said, had some low points where we just weren't sure it was going to work, but we stuck it out. And really worked with him on, what do you need from us? Let's try this. And that didn't work. We tried something else. And just lots of different options we tried. And he started to do really well and flourished then in that apartment setting, that supervised apartment setting. So at one point then we decided, like, I think this person is maybe getting ready to transition on. Let's create a different type of setting that one step closer to being more independent. So moved into a setting that where we could provide part-time staffing, not 24 hours. There was not a staff there 24 hours a day. There was a staff there during the day to check in, make sure they had groceries, make sure, you know, they had all the support that they needed, but to give them even more freedom and independence from, you know, somebody looking over them all of the time. And so in the, you know, learning that setting, he, you know, he had a girlfriend and, you know, all the things that we all learn the hard way sometimes with relationships and, you know, just he, like, you know, he just did so well in that setting. He learned to kind of support all the relationships around him. He talked a lot with the staff about the relationship with the girlfriend, all of that kind of stuff. He ended up asking, you know, talking about giving the girlfriend a promise ring and just an amazing, really, and I get kind of welled up thinking about it, and doesn't seem like that big a deal because we all do that, but it's just amazing to see somebody go.
Kidding, that's a huge deal, and that's a fabulous story.
Yeah.
You should get welled up. I'm getting welled up listening to it.
To have him build so much self-confidence and strength and skills, and to, you know, it's hard work to have a relationship with somebody, and those are hard things to learn, and then to really have that happen for him, and to have, you know, him thinking about asking this person to marry him, that's a huge deal. He secured a job in the community at a hair salon, and they, you know, he did an awesome thing. I mean, he was such a valuable part of their, he wasn't cutting hair. He was, you know, helping keep the place clean up, and he was the person that you checked in with when you came in the door, and they all appreciated him so much. They gave him, you know, special, you know, Employee of the Month rewards and things like that. So to take somebody who was almost nearly, well, he was dependent on people to be there and be supporting him 24 hours a day, and to see him grow and learn new skills and find his own way, build his own life. It's
amazing.
It's the coolest thing to be a part of.
That's just fabulous. Very cool. And I think what I'm hearing from that entire story is that you and the staff were paying attention. And it goes back to your
initial attention.
What?
You have to pay attention, or you will miss. It's not about what I want or what a staff person wants or whatever. If you don't pay attention, you don't see what the individual wants, and then they're not going to be successful if you don't support what they want.
Well, there's that. I mean, it's. I guess I'm making that point again and again and again, because if people find themselves in this situation, it's not enough to just say, okay, well, they know what they're doing and walk away. No, you need to make sure that your person is heard, basically.
Yes.
Is heard.
They need to challenge the status quo, and I, as a person that's helping support individuals, I appreciate that. I want people to voice their opinions to me. You know, I don't think they really like doing that. What can we do more for them, or what can we do different? That's what I want. I need that input. The provider needs that input to be able to create the best living situation for that individual.
You have a team of people that you use, correct? I mean, you have a team of people that are ancillary to the whole process for the person. So I think maybe we should define that a little bit too, because we got a few minutes left. And I think maybe people need to understand what they're what is available. I mean, you have speech therapists, and you have doctors, and you have
Oh, absolutely.
You have, right?
Yeah, right. So it's it's all built around the individual. That's, I mean, I just want to say that. I can't say that enough. It's the individual that drives what services or people are around them and providing those supports. So we call it the interdisciplinary team. So, but the person receiving the services is the most important part of that team. Then you have their, maybe a guardian, somebody that helps them make decisions, or family members that are involved with them. Then you have the staff and the managers that are helping create the program plans and things like that. You have a primary care physician. You have a dietitian, maybe. You have a behavior analyst, if that's necessary. Like you mentioned, a speech therapist, an occupational therapist, a physical therapist. Basically, any supports that that person needs, those individuals become part of the team. So then it's somebody, you know, somebody similar to in my position, that it's my job to make sure that all of those people come together to meet the needs of that particular individual who's receiving the support. And is it what they want? Is it meeting their needs, but is it what they want? Is it keeping them healthy? Is it teaching them new skills, but is it what they want? It has to meet all of those requirements. Well, so it's a
so
team of people.
Let's talk for a second.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let me.
That's all right.
Let's just walk through that for a second. Let's take a person that comes in. It's got some intellectual disabilities. Maybe has a little autism with it. Is working. Or is able to participate in some kind of work program, and you get them all structured for that, and you get some activities going. But obviously, when I mentioned the autism for a reason, because medically there may be some physical issues that may challenge this person a little more than some others. Maybe some swallowing difficulty, maybe some chewing difficulty, maybe some special foods, maybe there's some physical limitations. And so then you would need a speech therapist, you would need a physical therapist, you would need an occupational therapist, you would need a dietitian, you would need a doctor. So you have all of those services available for that particular person, and a lot of times people come into these kinds of situations with multiple issues. So that interdisciplinary team you're talking about is crucial to their success. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And to have somebody working on that team that can pull all of those professional opinions together and make it all jive with what's important, like I said, what's important to the person, what's important to the family, what's important for that person to move forward and be successful. Because everybody has their own parts. You know, the primary care physician is, you know, going to want all of the medical things to be exactly in order. And the, you know, the behavior analyst is going to want to, you know, have techniques and ways to interact with the person to help them be the most successful. But all of those things have to be come together. But they also have to still provide for the person to make a choice. For example, my primary care physician might give me some information and tell me I should do this or that, or, you know, 5 pounds or whatever the case is. I still get to make a choice if I want to follow that recommendation or not. And I have the right to learn, I might take that for myself, but to learn about what that choice means to me. So if I make that choice, this might be the what happens as a result of that choice. So for individuals, it's about bringing all that information together, talking about what's important to them. If they don't want to follow a recommendation from a physician or from the dietitian or whatever the case is, let's talk about what might happen as a result of that choice. Let's educate that person and their loved ones, their family, their guardian about what risk that presents for the person, and then they get to decide if that's an okay thing to take that risk. We all decide to take risks. Every day when we walk out our front doors, we decide to take a risk and, you know, change a lane too fast in our cars or whatever the case is. And so people with disabilities get to take some of those risks too. they just need somebody to kind of, like I said, pull all of those opinions together and talk to them about what those choices mean and where that might take them. So the team is absolutely important, but like I said before, the most important person on that team is the individual that's receiving the support.
Mm-hmm. And all of that being said, I mean, there's just so much to talk about here. And, you know, it's always amazing to me when I do this show because, I think I'm picking a topic that we can talk about in 60 minutes and you know, kind of get through. And we never do. We always have so much more to say and do. And I guess everybody's listening pretty intently, or they're not getting through because I'm not getting any questions tonight, which means, Leah, you're doing a fabulous job. So thank you. But the thing is what there was a point that I was going for there and I just lost it. But the overall point here is that when you're looking at this kind of situation, I think what you've just described, and we've just done this for 50 minutes now, you've just described normal life. You've described,
that's right.
We all have challenges of some sort. These guys tend to have a little more challenges than a lot of us, and they need some extra help. And I think, if you agree, I think that is how I think I'd like to frame it for the next few minutes, because, like I started out earlier, people have a tendency to compartmentalize and say, oh, this one versus that one, I'll stick this over here in my brain, they're different over here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not hearing anything that's really different. I'm just hearing things that, yeah, they've got some, you know, some of them are real severe, some of them are less severe, but what's the difference between my house, your house, my neighbor's house across the street, down the street, in the next neighborhood? Everybody's got issues. Everybody's got stuff. I'm not minimizing.
Everybody has issues.
Yeah.
Everybody has issues.
Understand, I'm not minimizing what is happening with these guys. I'm not. But I am saying that that I'm trying to make the point that it's more normal than you think, and that, yes, they have challenges, but this is how you deal with those challenges, and look how far the possibilities can reach. They can go as far as anybody wants them to go, as long as they've got the help along the way, right?
That's exactly right. They're amazing people. I've worked with probably hundreds of individuals, and I'm thankful every single day for the opportunities that I learn things from them. The people that I have worked with over the years, they have taught me to look at things differently, look at life differently, challenge myself differently than I had in the past. Because if I work with somebody that has what I consider maybe more challenges than I do, and they still work hard at it, and they smile, and they have a good day, and they learn new things, then I need to be able to do that too. It's inspiring, and it's the same. You're exactly right. Everybody has challenges, and everybody has something, a support system that helps them navigate those challenges. And that's what people with disabilities have too. Their support system maybe looks a little different. It might have a doctor and a dietitian and a behavior analyst, but that's the support system. Everybody has one. So, you know, my message to people is just, they're people. They have a lot to contribute. They have a lot to teach us. They have a lot to, they have hopes and dreams and things that they want to do with their lives, just like everybody else. So.
Well, and that is so apropos, because we're almost out of time, and that's exactly the point I wanted to make on this show, in that they have lives like everybody else, and they're a whole lot more like us than not like us. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have access to a group home in your neighborhood, you know, Leah's right. It can be very rewarding. So don't turn away from it. Embrace it. You know, maybe you're the person that gives the piano lessons to the person that is interested in the piano. Who knows, you know? Or maybe it's the guitar.
Right, or just waving and saying hello and making them feel like they're part of the neighborhood. That can make a huge difference. That makes a huge difference for any of us. Somebody smiles, says hello. That makes anybody feel good and feel like they're a part of something. And that's just a basic need for people.
Right.
No matter what your disability, you need to feel like you're a part of something. And
it's easy
to be a good neighbor.
That's right. If you have a nice garden in your yard and you want to share those gardening techniques with somebody, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody that's open to it and wants to learn. You know, one point, we've got just a couple of minutes. One point I wanted to kind of ask you about, and it's not really a point, but just a point of interest. What about animals? Any animals in these situations? And have you found that, you know, they enhance or not, or, you know? Whoa.
Yeah, animals is always an interesting conversation because especially if you live with other people, you have to make sure that those other people are okay with the animals too. You know, it's their home and everybody needs to be comfortable in their home. I've worked with individuals that are looking for a place to live, and they say, you know, this, you know, my son has a bearded dragon. He's had it for 8 years and it's non-negotiable. So can he have it there or not? If not, we're going to look somewhere else. And I absolutely respect that. And I was excited. I like bearded dragons, so that was fun. But just so that kind of thing works in some situations, it doesn't work in other situations. So those are the kinds of questions that, you know, that we were talking about, families asking, and families or whoever's, you know, looking for help for the person, they need to have high expectations. If that's important to the person, then try to find somewhere where that is okay, where that will work. You know, if I have a pet and I'm looking for a place to rent or whatever, if it's a place that isn't going to let my dog be there, then I'm not going to rent that place. So
right.
There, you know, we need to have those same expectations for everybody.
That's kind of like, you know, don't rip the pet away from the person if it's that important, because, that pet is probably doing a whole lot of good that you're not even realizing until that person no longer has that pet, you know? So.
Right. Those of us that are pet people, we get
right.
that.
Yeah, we get that. Some people don't. And if you happen to not be a pet person, but you're a person that you're looking at for these particular types of services, is a pet person, or you've seen them flourish with the pet, or they're inseparable, please don't yank that pet away from them. Find the right place.
That's a relationship, and relationships are important. So
right. Leah, we're almost done here. We got a couple minutes left. Is there anything you'd like to say that we haven't said? Any point you'd like to make that we haven't made?
Well, I want to talk about, just for a second, about recognizing just all of the people that work in these settings. They work in group homes. They work in these supported, you know, living situations. And they come in every day, and they're providing cares, and the decisions that they make and their attitudes and how they approach people makes a difference day to day for individuals. And it's a very rewarding job, but sometimes it's kind of thankless, and it doesn't pay that great, but it's such important work. And I just, you know, would like to, you know, just a kind of a shout out to all of the people who work in the field and work to support other individuals and kind of meeting their goals and their dreams. It's a hard job, but it's such important work. So
it's absolutely true. And thank you for what you do. And thank you for enlightening us tonight. I mean, it's just been, you've given us so much information. Thank you so very much for being here. I know that once people start archiving this, I'm going to get a whole lot of feedback. And so, I can't thank you enough, and I can't, we need to do some kind of follow-up, so if you're willing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. It's always good to get more understanding out there and give people the opportunity to learn.
Absolutely. So we'll have Leah back. I'm just not sure when. Our next show is going to be 2 weeks from tonight. And actually, Jane Kaufman's coming back. She is a physical therapist, if those of you have been listening. She was a physical therapist that joined us for the first time last year. And we were talking about another issue that I thought, maybe not. And then we turned into like, oh, my God, there's so much here. It's ridiculous. We're going to talk about pelvic health and the kinds of things that men and women both should do. We didn't even get to men last time. That's just how much there was to talk about. So we're going to make sure the man's component is in there. So, guys, if you're having issues with, certain things that have to come out, we're going to talk about how to sometimes when you have to keep them in, you got to keep them in. You got to learn how to do that. So we're going to talk about all that. So on that note, I'm going to say thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. Give us your feedback. Tell us what you like to hear. That show that I just mentioned is strictly from your comments from last year and then a follow-up. So, and we got major feedback on that one, so we're very excited. And, Leah, we can't wait to have you back. I'm going to say thank you again. And then I'm going to take you out with our out music. So
thank you, Carol.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.